Welcome to the CEN Show, the voice of the world community. The CommunityEducationNetwork.com is a website that features a dynamic educational team with a wealth of experience that's making a positive contribution to society. I'm going to show the website. I'm not showing the website. Let me go back. Bear with me here. I had it highlighted. Oh, there it is. Okay, here's the website, Community Education Network. We have a homepage. This is the homepage. And as you can see, anybody that want to come on the shows, they can just come right in on the homepage. We had Conscious Corner last on Monday. It was a great show. Now, here we are this evening right here with our guests. I will introduce them later. We have the About section tells you all about us. We have the podcast. The shows are on audio on the website and on YouTube. You see the video. We have perspective writings by myself and Brother Thomas. We got a legends page with Professor Amun-Ra is one of the featured legends that we have. Community actions. We have a forum, and we need people to start coming on the forum and bringing us some good, topics to talk about. And also, we have a recommendations page, and I will show that one. The recommendation page has services and products. We have a lot of recommendations on here. And that's our website. A good place to go to get some good conscious food. And that's mental food mostly. Okay. I am your host, Roski Mascani. I would like to introduce the panel. Let's see who we have here this evening. We have Brother Doctor. We have Professor Amun-Ra, Brother Mashinda. We have Sister Making It Happen. And we got Brother Joe Hembry. This is some people that's very consistent with coming, and they are team members, official and unofficial. Brother Doctor and Brother Mashinda is family, so they're unofficial. They're not on the website, but anytime they want to be on there, we can add them to it. Okay. So tonight's topic is images of professionalism. Tonight we have two guests. We have Spring and Damian McCallman, a mother and son combination. This is Damian's second appearance as a guest, and his first visit was in May of this year, and I'm glad he's back. It was an excellent show, and it was excellent of him to bring his mom this evening, and that should be a real good treat for us. Good evening, Ms. McCallman. We will start with you. How are you? And please share some things about yourself.
Okay, I'm fine, my name is Spring McCallman. I grew up in L.A. I actually went to three high schools. I went to Fremont and Manual Arts, and I graduated from Jordan High School in L.A. I grew up in the 70s. I graduated in 1972. So by the time I got ready to graduate, that was the time when gangs started coming up in Watts, and a lot of my friends got killed. So I still went to school, graduated. I ended up having a professor or a teacher, a white teacher, who encouraged me. Once I started applying for colleges, he actually told me about Chapman. And he told me, he said, well, you know what, you're a smart young lady, and I would suggest you go to my alma mater, which was Chapman. I had applied to USC and UC Riverside and those colleges. And he told me, he said, you're probably gonna get accepted. But I'm gonna tell you that if you go there, what they're looking for is smart black kids. So they'll throw money at you. So I was able to go to Chapman, graduated in 1977 with 2 degrees. But that was through going through summer school, winter school, and whatever time they offered school. And I ended up only owing $200 National Defense Loan. And I paid that on my way out the door. So I was able to get scholarships and grants for the whole 4 years. I ended up getting a degree in social work and one in criminal justice. And I had, when I was growing up, my mother was on welfare. So I actually saw a social worker come to the house. And it was like that movie, Claudine, where they come in and they search underneath your beds and they do all that stuff. And I actually was intrigued by it. And I watched my mother's reaction. And yeah, we were hiding things and my father lived with us. But my mother at that point, she didn't work, but then she did start working and she was a housekeeper. My father worked at a battery company. And so when I was looking at that, I just thought it was like, wow, somebody has that much control and power over you. I don't know. I just wanted to do that. that's why I went to college to be a social worker. And I ended up working for LA County for 38 years. I retired 4 or 5 years ago. I ended up being a manager, lower level manager, but I did become a manager. And I worked in welfare, which is what I wanted to do, because I wanted to help people and I wanted to encourage people to get an education and that use this for a stepping stone, but not for a crutch. So that was my motto. And every time I would interview a client, I would tell them the county had so many programs. Did you know, did they know about them? And I encouraged them to join them. So that was my goal. And then by the time I left the county, I was actually a manager at our teaching academy. So I worked with trainers and the districts. So that's me. I have 2 children, Damien and Chantel, and both of them are on their own. They're not living with me, even though they know they always have a home if they need one. So, and I have about 12 grandkids and 3 great-grandkids. So that's me. Oh, I'm single.
Come on now.
that's a beautiful story. And I would like to add to what you were saying. Now, I had a brother who came out in 72 also, and he went to Chapman College.
Okay.
So you guys probably crossed each other's path. And he didn't finish there, but he went there coming out of high school.
Okay.
And then the story that you told about the welfare lady coming out to your house, and it was like the movie Claudine. Right. And by you seeing that and wanting to do that is something that I actually teach when I'm teaching my students. Mm-hmm. I told them that, you know, when you have vision, that gives you something to look forward to. It's like setting a goal. Mm-hmm. And so you, in what I'm getting from that, you visualize yourself being that, right, and you were able to accomplish that by, you know, realizing your dreams. So that's awesome. I think that's really awesome. Okay, so I appreciate you sharing with us. We're going to go to Damien. Damien, welcome back. I'm glad you're here. And so can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And then also you can start the presentation.
Sure. Let me see, I guess. Well, I'm 44, married, 11 years, 3 children. 9, 7, and 4. I'm trying to think. I work for a nonprofit organization called Elevate Your Game, where we do mentoring programs on high school campuses. And I've been doing that for 10 years. Like she said, you know, just grew up. I was born, I guess, in South Central LA. I don't know if I grew up in South Central LA. We moved about my 10th grade year to Lakewood. And I think that's probably where I really started to grow and develop as an individual. That was my first time going to school with my neighbors.
Yes.
So I think from first through ninth grade, I went to school. I was bused to the San Fernando Valley, which was fine with me. I liked it. I liked the school. I liked the teachers. I liked the students. But then when we moved to Lakewood, I got a chance to go to school with neighbors. And that was the first time that I ever got a chance to do that. That was the first time I ever went to friends' houses, you know, because they were my neighbors. And that those are my friends to this day. So I'm happy about that. Graduated high school in 96. Dabbled. Can I say dabbled in college for a minute?
Yes, for a minute.
But I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. I knew it, but I didn't know it. So I just dabbled in it and then just started working. So from there, I think that's how I got to here and working with youth. I found that that was something that I enjoyed to do. Like she said, even encourage people and challenge them to be them the best version of themselves. That was something that I found that I could do. And just working with people, that was something that I found joyful. I like working with people. But that was my joy. So that's who I am, and we are here today. Should I just start? Okay, so we're here today because in my work with youth, one of the biggest things that I hear periodically, during the summer, we do a summer internship where we train students to go work, right? We have businesses that we partner with, and we train them for maybe four or five Fridays in a row, and then we send them out to work. And one of the things that we teach them is professionalism. And, you know, and throughout the year, you know, professionalism comes up in some way, shape, or form. But I think over the years, I would hear students say, "You're trying to make me white." And I think just recently I heard it again, which made me, you know, ultimately call my mom and say, "Hey, I'm hearing this. What is this? Why is this?" And then we began to talk about, you know, her teaching me to be professional, why she did it. And we just started talking about her development in that area. And I guess that's what we'll do now. So for yourself, I'm going to sort of interview her. So for yourself, you know, who taught you? Why did you find it? Why did you think it was necessary first to teach me professionalism? Why do you think that was necessary?
For you to get a job.
Okay,
For me to get a job. I felt that you had to dress a certain way. You had to know how to talk. You had to present yourself in a manner. And I remember when we were talking about it, I told you that I actually got it later on in life to be professional. Mm-hmm. But in reality, when I think back, now that I think back, I remember when we would go out, and my mother or my father would say, "Okay, you need to go in the room, change your clothes. We're going out, so we're going to be amongst people. So what you have to do, I don't want any arguing. I don't want any fighting. I want you to put on your best clothes, and I want you to listen to people. I want you to talk in a low voice." And that was actually my first idea of what professionalism was.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they demanded that you act a certain way. Then when you get home, you can act however you want. Mm-hmm. But when you're around people, you have to act a certain way, which is what I didn't tell you because I didn't remember. Mm-hmm. But, and then so as I got older and I started going into the job market, I realized that there were rules. There mm-hmm. were rules of etiquette. And if you came on confrontational, most likely you didn't get the job. If mm-hmm. you came on sounding like you weren't educated, you wouldn't get the job. Yeah. So with all the competition going around, I told you, I remember when you were doing salesperson mm-hmm. and we went out and we bought shirts and ties and pants and shoes, and you were actually paving the ground. You were actually walking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I told you, you had to look a certain way. Right. And I told you, you had to act a certain way. Mm-hmm. So then I remember when you were going out on job interviews, yeah, and you were going out with your friends. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, wait a minute. Why are you going out with your friends? Why are you giving people choices? Mm-hmm. You're supposed to go out by yourself.
Yeah.
And you go get a job. Don't go with your friends, mm-hmm, because now instead of three or four, now instead of one choice, they can actually pick from the three or four of you. Mm-hmm. So you're actually cheating yourself.
Yeah.
So that's how that came about. But in school, like I said, when I was in school at Jordan, I was in AE classes, which is college prep classes, and they gave you ideas of how to dress. They showed you, they did mock interviews. They wanted you to get prepared, yeah, for jobs. So that helped me. So as I got older, even with LA County, we would have like back to school, I mean, bring your sons and daughters to work day. Mm-hmm. And in those days, we always had a segment of professionalism. We would do a fashion show to show you how you need to dress. Mm-hmm. We would do mock interviews. We would do resumes so then when they came out, they could get jobs. Mm-hmm. That's what we would do.
Gotcha. And I think I remember you taking me to get shirts and ties for a sales job. And I was confused because I'm like, I'm walking, mm-hmm, walking down the street. I'm thinking tennis shoes, maybe, you know, jeans, t-shirt. She was like, no, shirt and tie, because this is the professional, you know, people are going to receive you as a professional. But, it you know, I was like, it's going to be hot out there. I need some shoes. I need comfortable. But I do remember you doing that.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you guys a definition of professionalism, and this is going to lead into more. But it says the conduct, how you conduct yourself, aims or qualities that characterizes or marks a profession or a professional person, the conduct, behavior, and attitude of someone in a work or business environment, how a person comes to work and conducts themselves on the job. It says it involves dressing and conducting yourselves appropriately for someone in a professional position. That includes clothes, body language, and qualities such as integrity and confidence. So these are the things that we teach our students, too. You know, when you go, you have to be a professional. This is what it looks like. And I think, you know, where it says appropriately, in my research, it says that appropriately is subjective. You know, because one company could say this is professional versus another. So, you know, when we're teaching these youth, Black and brown students, how to be professional, even in the dress, the all the things that we hear, I always still hear them say, you're trying to make me white. That's not how we dress, shirt and tie, right? I think for us who are in schools, you know, they have shirt and tie days for boys, and it's fun, but you always got some kids like, you're trying to make me white. It's not how we dress. Body language, we use our hands, mm-hmm, and it's like, you know, we sometimes teach them, like, you know, to other folks who you are working with, that could come off a certain way, you know what I mean? But then also just knowing that your body language says something. It may not be your hand movement. It might just be slouching. Mm-hmm. It might just be arms crossed, you know what I mean? But, you know, when we're teaching these students these things, I hear it time and time again that you're making me white, which is the point of the conversation. I want you guys to think about these questions, and we'll get to them once we're done. Who taught you professionalism? What does professionalism mean to you? When is it time to exhibit professionalism? Why is professionalism important? How should we teach and encourage professionalism, whether it's young, old, because you was talking about doing it on the job. So you're working with adults, you know what I mean? And lastly, is professionalism cultural? Is it cultural? And I want you guys to think about that, and I'll show the questions next. But then, like for you, we talked about, for me, I'll start with me because I know the slides. So, you know, growing up, I had to think back. Yeah. Like, who was my image of professionalism? And I just thought back to, I just remember seeing Colin Powell on TV during the war. And it was like, for some reason, he just came across as all those things that you was telling me, you know what I mean? Or told me growing up, you know, talk a certain way, look a certain way, carry yourself a certain way, know what you're talking about. You know what I mean? And I think we even talked about, cause she helped me create some stuff for our students. I think you even said, like, if you don't know what you're talking about, act like you know what you're talking about. So, like, you know, I was like, he always put that out where he knows exactly what he's talking about in my mind. And that was my image of professionalism, right? I would see him whenever I saw Colin Powell on TV, I would stop doing what I was doing and just listen. I wanted to know what he had to say. And that's to my adult years, right? So for me, it was Colin Powell. Like, even, I know he passed away, I don't know, I can't say recently, maybe last year, I don't know. But I watched his funeral service, and I was listening to people talk about him in that area of professionalism. Like, even if he disagreed with something that I was saying, he never got unprofessional. And if, you know, somebody said, if I took something the wrong way, he always found a way to come back to me and say, hey, let's sit down and talk. So, like, you know, for me, it was him. I asked my mom who was her image of professionalism, and she said it was Maxine Waters. So can you tell us why Maxine Waters was your image of professionalism?
I like Maxine Waters because she's smart, she carried herself a certain way, and she didn't take any mess. So she knew how, if something, somebody says something she doesn't like, she responds. She doesn't have to curse. She doesn't have to swear, but she gets the points across. So that's why I just love her. She dresses a certain way. She has a certain attitude. So that's why I liked her.
And I had to, go ahead.
Okay. And even when I was a kid, that's who I looked up to. Even as a young teenager in school, I think I even wrote a paper about her. Wow. Yeah.
I saw that she first came, I don't know, in a scene in 76, maybe?
Yeah.
So from back then, I'm looking at this picture with Kennedy. She was already out there, which I don't know about. But it's like, so for you, she was that image. Nice. So for you guys, again, I want you guys to think of who was your image of professionalism. Because for me, it was Colin Powell. For her, it was Maxine Waters. Does professionalism, can I, you know, as a young man, could you, as a young lady, look to a man and say, okay, he's my image? You think that works? You think, you know, we follow after sort of our gender in that sense?
To me, I looked at her because she was a woman. That is what made me look at her, because she's a woman.
Yeah.
She's a Black woman.
Gotcha.
So that's what captivated me about her. Gotcha. And she was a person. She was like, she's a mover and a shaker.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So
That's your power thing.
Yeah, apparently that's my power thing. Yeah, that's my power trip.
But no, I think, like you said, for myself, because I had you, right? You taught me all these things. You spoke them. And we even talked about how she would, I was telling recently, I just thought about, she started a Facebook page. I started her a Facebook
page. Thank you,
because
I didn't.
Okay. I created her a Facebook page, but I thought about one of her friends that I don't know if I've known her forever.
You've known her since, well, it's been probably about 20 years.
Okay. Yeah. So I've known her for 20 years, but I realized one day that I hadn't heard her talk about her or seen her. So I asked her about her. And then, you know, I found this lady on Facebook. And the first thing that my mom said is, how are you going to engage her? This is what you should say. Hello, Miss So-and-so. I'm Damian McCallman, Spring's son. And it went straight to professionalism.
Right.
And I'm like, this is Facebook. I'm going to say, hey, hello, I'm Damian. Here's my mom's number. Call her, Spring. Right. But she was like, no, do it this way. So for her and for me, like, you always had those moments to say, this is the professional way to do this in any setting,
right?
Which I thought about, I'm like, I'm 44 years old, but that's just what you do. And I think that's helped me grow and develop. And I was wondering, because we talked about it before, our youth today, do you think, and this is for everybody too, Do you guys think our youth are getting that? I'm going to turn to you guys. Did you get that growing up? How did you learn professionalism? I guess, Mr., we can turn it over to the panel now, and then we can just have.
Okay, you can go out of the sharing the screen for right now. Okay. So I'm going to start with Sister Making It Happen. Sister Making It Happen, can you say that question again for her, please?
Yes. Who taught you professionalism? You want me to go through them all or just read them off?
Probably just one at a time. Well, you know, for the sake of time.
Yes.
So just probably one at a time.
Okay.
Because you still have more to share on the PowerPoint.
No.
Okay. No. So yeah, we can kind of go around the panel and loop some. Yeah. Okay.
So the first question is, who taught you professionalism?
Good evening, everyone. I thank you all for the opportunity, and I'm really, really impressed with the family, the mother and son family. You're a great inspiration, and I thank you for making the time and the space for this moment. So listening to your mother, listening to your story, I have to say that it starts at home for me. You know, my mother and my father valued education, valued entrepreneurship, valued independent thinking, valued strong cultural connection to Africa. So that was my worldview in that sense. Going forward, I have a couple of stepmoms, and one in particular was very, very, very inspirational. She's a LA native. She went to one of the Eastside high schools, and so she's a real LA girl, and I just love her. She was very professional. She was a foster parent. She recently made her transition, but she really taught me about money and a sense of how to think about my future saving and how I presented myself. I did go to college, so I had some great professors. Cal State LA at Dr. Shirley Better. I had some great professors that were always, I could see myself. And so in high school, I did ROP, Regional Occupational Program. I was always into business because of the family that I came from, thinking about how you're going to make a living when you grow up. Mm-hmm. And try to have a business too, in addition to a job. So I learned that from my family, for the most part, and mentors that I've been able to attain.
Nice.
All right. Thanks a lot. Brother Doctor?
What was the question again? I know something about professional. Where did I learn professionalism from, or what was it? How did you put it?
Yeah, who taught you professionalism?
It has to be a coworker. I started my career early on, civil service at 21. And when I got in there, you know, when you go do little interviews, take your exams, you really didn't have to wear a suit or anything. You just went in there and did it. It didn't come to the point until it was time to start promoting within the agency, the department. And people were going to interviews. I just had a coworker. He was always going to interviews, dressed down. I was like, man, why are you not dressed up? Other people are getting dressed up, and he explained it. He ran it down to me, and explained everything, and I just took his lead when I went out and started. Then he talked me into getting a real estate license. Mm-hmm. Then that really came more, explaining professionalism. Then I got it. Then I got it, man. And it was a coworker.
Nice. That
explained everything to me.
Okay, thanks a lot. Brother Mashinda?
Hey, good evening. I want to thank the guests for sharing tonight. You know, I guess it started with, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, this, you know, it started with childhood. You know, I remember when I was a youngster, my dad, we used to wake up early in the morning, making noise, you know, before, you know, of course, you know, before my parents woke up, you know, the time they were together, you know, and so we would run around the house, you know, just waking up, turning the TV on loud, fighting, fussing, you know, over cereal. And so he used to get on to us about, you know, he used to say straighten up, and he had his methods. You know, he was in the Marine Corps, you know, drafted into the Marine Corps, you know, at an early age. And so he basically, you know, used to pretty much discipline us and, you know, from right to wrong, you know. So the word straighten up, sit up straight, speak up, those types of things. So I can recall that early in life. You know, did I take to it, you know, to another level? Probably not. You know, of course, it was ingrained in me, at, you know, and then I guess when I got grown, and even to this age, it, you know, to, you know, where I'm at today, I can reflect back on his teachings. My mother, she was a little more, she was more humble, had a meek disposition, but don't get it twisted. You know, she had a serious influence, and she knew how to discipline as well. So, and then of course, growing up, in my time, we had the extended family in the neighborhood, and so I grew up early Compton, you know, and then watched the transition, white flight, those type of things, you know, like your mom, Brother Damien. My mom went to Georgia; she went to Fremont a little earlier than your mom did, but so living in Watts and then moving to Compton, it was middle class. You know, my neighbors were. Across the street were real estate brokers. We had lawyers on the block. The mayor lived on our street, the first black mayor woman. We had, like I said, my best friend's dad was a lawyer. We had doctors and dentists on our block. I don't know if Brother Rossi Key remember that. But so my point is we were being influenced probably without even knowing it, you know, just you know, in terms of just, you know, I guess it was just an influence, you know. So I'm just looking at my influences. But as far as, you know, so fast forward in the tape, you know, my counselors, you know, at high school, they weren't too helpful, you know, at that time. You know, there's a lot going on in the world as time went on. So I had friends of mine, you know, they live in Carson. And, you know, some of them and their people were, professionals, you know, of course, my dad, mom, you know, they had jobs and I like to consider them as professional people, but, you know, blue collar or, you know, hard worker. And then, but like I say, so just having the influence of, like I say, extended family, parents. So going to college, you know, taking classes and things like that. I didn't take college serious my first few years. Then one day I woke up and then, you know, I joined fraternal organizations, things like that. And that's when I, you know, started realizing, you know, that, you know, to be a part of that organization, they required certain behavior. And so, you know, I kind of played the role, so to speak. You know, I was from the neighborhood, you know, never portrayed myself as a gang member. But, you know, we grew up on the block, you know, it was what it was. But, you know, so like I say, as I, you know, took my steps through life, you know, I took my hits at the same time. I accepted the positive. And then, of course, you know, finishing school and doing multiple jobs, getting more training. And, of course, I've taught job-seeking skills and orientation classes and things like that, you know, just to name a couple things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so it's just a holistic approach, you know. So, again, multiple folks and multiple situations had an influence on my professionalism, you know. So, you know, I never wanted to, you know, it was a point in my life, I guess, you know, where I was kind of revolutionary. I wasn't trying to simulate, you know, because, you know, you know, understanding, you know, the world and capitalism and commercialism and what is this all about, you know. But at the end of the day, I had to get a job, you know, I had to, of course. So, you know, you have to, you know, present yourself, put your best foot forward. And but at the same time, like one of my professors told me, you know, hey, you got to get what you're getting. You know, like in other words, you're sitting in the class taking in certain information, but, you know, and that, you know, but write down, you know, there's other truths that, you know, just kind of, you know, expand on that. But it's kind of interesting dynamic in terms of learning, you know, like a dichotomy of learning, because, you know, we, you know, there's different levels of understanding, but it's kind of like, you know, it can become a struggle, you know, in terms of, you know, you're trying to get a job, you know. So anyway, what I'm saying is I've been working through my life, like yourself, you know, nonprofit organization, working for yourself, which is a great thing, you know. And I understand what you were talking about, you know, they say, oh, you're trying to teach me to be white or whatever. You know, no, you're just trying to, you know, impart some values or, you know, a way to conduct yourself in order so you can survive, for you and your family. You know, some people get called a sellout or whatever, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, we're all in this country and we know the ills of this country. We know the way the world is, but, you know, we survive the best way we can, you know. So I just wanted to impart that. But anyway, thank you all for presenting tonight. I really appreciate it. Me and your mom have a lot in common in terms of, you know, our path through life. You know, I've worked with welfare to school kids, you know, children that parents or students, grown-ups that are receiving welfare that are trying to go to community college. And I worked with that for several years and managing the budget as far as them, you know, coming to the school and getting into them into programs and graduating, becoming, you know, self-sufficient and independent. So, again, I could talk all night. Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you, sir. All right. Brother Henry?
Yes, sir. You know, I see both sides of the spectrum. I have a question of the brother, saying that he went to school in the Valley and then went to Lakewood. Mm-hmm. How would you feel like walking a few blocks in the neighborhood? How comfortable would you feel doing that? Seemed like you didn't have that kind of, you know, activity. But anyway, I was, you know, for myself, you know, I was the only Black in my class from kindergarten to seventh grade and then moved to Compton. So, you know, I had all of the, as the kids would say, being white, acting white, dealing with whites. And then moved to Compton and, you know, coming to Compton like that, I had to learn how to fight real quick. Because they wasn't having that too much. I was always sharp in school when I first came. They were tripping off of that, like, man, this dude is smart, you know. But, you know, the curriculum I had with the white folks was like 3-4 years ahead of where Compton was at the time. So I had some thug days. Matter of fact, one of my buddies used to tell me that I was just an educated thug. I went through those years because my first hero was Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. And Muhammad Ali, due to the experiences that I had with the white folks, you know, during my elementary and first year of junior high school. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I went through all that. And I had a few teachers that inspired me to, you know, when I decided I wanted to be a coach, that was my decision. I knew I had to teach something. So I had a few guys that inspired me, one by the name of Frank Wainwright at Southwest College. He was one of my professors. Then I had a couple of guys at Loyola Marymount. When I was at UCLA, I was just a number. You know, you never get talked to the professors at those big places. So when I was at Loyola, I had a whole different experience. Hmm. And, you know, so I started teaching and I was coaching. and you know, trying to make connection with my students, you know, because I had more of the other, you know, more so than the Elevate Your Game type of kids. Matter of fact, I know Brother Freeman. Matter of fact, his brother was a year ahead of me in school. I know you know Freeman.
Yes.
But anyway, I started out in Linwood, and they kind of thought they was white, but weren't. And so I stayed there 11 years, you know, trying to help them because they were black. And then I took a pay cut to come to Centennial, where I was really needed. You know, those kids, if you've ever been on the campus, you know what I'm talking about. So I really wanted to connect with them, and there would be times that I would be teaching and they would be tripping and cutting up, and I would do, like you said, I start teaching like I was white. They like, stop talking like that. Stop talking like that. Talk so we can, you know, talk so we can understand you. I said, well, you guys straighten up and I'll do that. My thing is making a connection with wherever and whoever you're with and where you're around.
Yeah.
That always seems to work best, but you know, I've spoken at conferences and whatnot where I had to, you know, I'd say play the game, but I was putting down some truth while I was doing that, especially about the distortions in history and all that, especially when I had to speak at Loyola. I was really fired up about that because I went there, you know, and I was speaking to a room of history teachers, telling them how the history was totally distorted, whatnot, and matter of fact, they discontinued the program after I spoke there. you know, folks can't take the truth. That's one thing I love that Malcolm used to say. When you're dealing with the enemy, you don't need a gun. You don't need a knife. Put something on him that he can't stand, which is the truth. He can't stand that. So anyway, I see the value in both. Like I said, it depends on where you are and who you're dealing with. You know, because I see the little thug kids all the time that I've taught over the years, and I'm glad to see they're still alive. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw one the other day walked up to me, and I knew his face right away. You know, I couldn't remember his name, but how do you feel? Do you feel is more, well, I already know the answer to this, is it's more that do not have that than do have that, or, you know, or that are aspiring to get that? Mm-hmm. And you know, so for the numbers, I try to deal with them on their level, you know, where they are.
Yeah.
I remember every Friday I used to have a current event day where they had to stand in front of the class and speak. Mm-hmm. I was prepared to go out there and speak. I said, I taught them all the rules about, you know, looking folks in the eye, observing the room as you speak, because you can get a grasp of it if you're getting to them or not getting to them, you know, about by the expressions on their face.
Yeah.
And I taught them the other methods to get a job, you know, like the cold cut method. You know, everything is not an application. You know, sometimes you got to have a portfolio and you go in there and sell the people on the fact of why they should hire you.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So, you know, I see both sides and I appreciate your presentation, but I want you to answer that question that I initially asked you about
what's the question?
I asked you what what you're growing up, you know, you were bust out in the valley. And then after that, you moved to Lakewood. Mm-hmm. I don't know what years Lakewood was, but I know Lakewood to be mostly a white community. I don't know if it was at the time you went to school there or not. So, you know, with that kind of bringing up and whatnot, how would you feel like if you had to go into projects, you know, back in the day, and walk through there and talk to some kids?
Got you. Crazy. It'd be crazy, right? because like you said, I remember growing up in Watts, living in Watts. Let's say living in Watts. And, you know, like I never went to school in Watts. So I would have went to high school at Locke or Centennial. So when I first started working on Elevate Your Game, and I think I told you that I got Centennial. And I think you was like, oh, you know what I mean? Because of the stuff. And I was nervous because I was like, okay, are they going to receive me? You know what I mean? Are they going to, because I like, growing up, you know, I was always different. I didn't talk like everybody. I didn't walk like everybody else. So I was nervous getting to Centennial because I was like, will they receive me? But after a while, I just said, I am who I am. And if I be who I am, they'll receive me. And like you said, I know a guy who's like, oh, yeah, you're square. You know, he's like, but that's who you are. And that's perfectly fine because you're not trying to be something else. So, you know, walking in Centennial and then Lakewood at the time I went to school, it was mainly Hispanic. So I was looking for the white kids. I'm like, where are the white folks at? You know what I mean? But they weren't even, they were there, but it was a small number. But because of going to school with them, there was a comfort. I didn't go to school with Hispanics. I didn't know what that was about. And all of a sudden, they don't like me because I'm Black. And I'm like, this is weird. What are we doing? So it was, the dynamic was the Hispanic was the bigger issue because they didn't like me because I was just Black. I don't know if that answered your question.
Kind of, sort of. If you would have been more even, well, I don't know about the program, but I remember a few times that I went into a couple of their meetings at Centennial. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it always seemed to have the upper crust of the student body with yeah. the GPAs and all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was targeting the middle to the lower
yeah.
type of student
mm-hmm.
Because I know that a lot of those highly gifted kids,
yeah.
you know, they end up, a lot of them committing suicide and this and that because they're not well-rounded enough
yeah.
because they've always been in these certain circles in school, you know, with the high achievers. And usually the ones that are least likely to succeed are the ones that end up succeeding. So I would talk to those kids about that.
Yeah.
And especially the special ed kids,
mm-hmm.
there's a whole lot of great people that we go, you know, that we mm-hmm. Kind of listen to their theories today who were special ed folks.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what's his name? The white guy got the wild hair. He was special ed. The theory of evolution and all of that.
Einstein.
Yeah, a lot of those folks were like special ed folks. So I would try to inspire, you know, the majority of them more so than targeting the mm-hmm. elite students, so to speak, because they were already getting a lot of services mm-hmm. that the others weren't. And a lot of the ones I'm speaking about has mm-hmm. problems reading.
Yeah, yeah.
Inspire them in that regard. So that's the reason I left Lynwood to go to Centennial in the first place. I was listening to a Black Conscious show and this girl came on there saying they didn't have no teachers, nobody teach them nothing, can somebody please come help us? So I resigned from Lynwood and took a pay cut and went to Centennial because mm-hmm. that's what I got in the business for, to help my people.
Gotcha.
And that's what I targeted.
Gotcha. I'll say just for that, I changed my programs. To sort of target them, because like you said, if we go and recruit classrooms, only the students who are already high achieving are going to volunteer to be a part of it. So then I just say, okay, let's partner with programs, you know, that are targeting those campuses or those students on campus, and I could just come in and do what we do with them. So I don't do any after school programs anymore. My programs are now connected to a program on campus that's dealing with those exact students so that we could reach them because, yeah, they weren't coming. They weren't coming. And I had a kid today who, well, we were talking about just advancing. How can you grow maturity-wise? He said he already had his stuff. You know, he's a freshman. He's at Poly. A freshman, young Black guy. He was like, I got to do X, Y, and Z. Who taught you that? I'm in a mentoring program where they're teaching me to carry myself a certain way, to be able to get up in front of a class and speak. So he was like, I have this because I'm getting it. So I was like, that's pretty cool. So yeah, I'm just trying to target them now because, yeah, we weren't getting them at first.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Professor Ron.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. And I want to say this. Oh, wow. Everybody's comments are very, very, very beneficial. I miss my comment. You said you grew up in Watts?
Yes, I did.
What part?
I live right there on, well, let me see. I'm trying to think. Bandera. 85th and Bandera.
Oh, 85th and Bandera, because my son lived over that area.
So I
grew up in Watts too. I grew up on all over Watts, all over. And then projects everywhere.
Okay, and then I used to go through the projects to go to Jordan.
You went to LA Jordan?
Yeah, I went to LA Jordan. I graduated from LA Jordan.
Is that right? What year you come out?
I came out in 1972.
Oh yeah, you're a baby. To me.
I'm a baby. I'm old.
I came out in 66.
But
I know a lot of people that went to Jordan. But let me just say this. You know, when we was coming up and going to school, it probably was just a little bit after you, Ms. McCall. We dressed up.
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
we dressed up. You couldn't leave the house if you wouldn't show up. People would laugh you out the school. You come there crazy.
That's true.
They're looking crazy. And we wore ties.
Yeah.
Hmm. Many of us wore ties in school. And we street brothers. You understand? I mean, we just came sharp.
Yeah.
You know, Superfly was sharp. The Mac was dark.
Yes, it was.
You understand? And, you know, all the... Brother Jim Brown then was sharp, you know, and so there was a required address. And your parents, even if you was going to the store, you didn't just represent you. You represented your family.
Right.
And they'd say, that boy ain't been raised right.
Right.
You understand? Manners.
Right.
Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Speak to the people walking. I mean, these were ethics that our parents got from the European, but it's to keep us out of trouble and keep us respected. And the word mister means master. Mm. That's the abbreviation of the word mister. And that's where that came from. And so we learned that the European set the standards of professionalism and of what they would call ethics, you know, Eurocentric ethics. You know, when you start talking about professionalism, you're talking about standards, behavior, conduct, and things of this nature that people associate you being polite, being respectful, being this. Then if you're a professional nurse or professional whatever other profession you're in, social worker, or not, depending on your skills, how professional you are at doing your job.
Mm-hmm.
At doing your job, you understand? Now, teaching young people life skills to hopefully get them employment, you're teaching them game.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? I mean, this is the game you in, you understand? And which is good. You know, don't get me wrong. I learned the hard way. Historian Henrik would know there's a principal named Audrey Clark. And the superintendent was Charlie Knight. So she told, I want to get a job teaching in Linwood. So I go there to the interview in a dashiki. Then the dashiki was with matching pants, everything. $200 dashiki in those days. You know, I'm talking about 80 something. Mm-hmm. And so she was part of the interview. They wouldn't hire me. So I went to the football game that night, and Charlie Knight asked me, what happened? I said, I ain't heard from her. So Charlie Knight called her up, and then she called me in. And she said, the reason they didn't hire you? You didn't have a shirt and tie.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I had a $200 dashiki. But these were Black people.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Audrey Clark was a Black woman. You understand?
Yeah.
But, you know, I had to be me. You see what I'm saying? At that time, because I'm already a professor, this was my second job, and, you know, I wore suits and ties all the time, sometimes at school, you know. I change up. There's no, you know, if I feel like being Afrocentric, I'll be Afrocentric. If I feel like putting a rope around my neck and all that, I'll do that, you know, every now and then. But the point is that we spend a lot of time, and I think we have to also include the dynamic that, you know, parents, as Sister make it happen, when you have two parents or when you have a strong mother like you have, and she's done a great job raising you and your sister, you can tell. But you know, you like Sister McHammon said, her mother and father, you know, were professional. During the 60s, most of our parents were not professionals.
We're not, no.
They were not in, you know, even the brothers and sisters with the BA was working in the post office.
Right. That's true.
You see what I'm saying? It wasn't until after 65 and the Watts Rebellion, not riot, rebellion, that they changed the dress code.
Yeah.
Mm. You understand? And opened up opportunities. Right. Manpower development program, we got to get some Black teachers in here because we got Black students, because most of our teachers were white. Mm-hmm. And most of the teachers that were Black were taught by whites, and many of them went to Black schools, but 50% of the teachers were white.
Yes.
In the South. You understand? But when you got out here to a college, only 2 or 1% of the teachers were Black.
Yeah.
And with a Black studies, you wouldn't even get a percentage.
Well, that's true.
That's the majority of your faculty.
Yeah.
Well, let me get to the point. So we look at this this dynamic. Times have changed today.
Mm-hmm.
When Snoop Dogg, Lil Wayne, then can get up and make millions of dollars cussing, tattooed all on top of their head, earrings and jewelry and all that, it's hard to tell young people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't make it unless you was white. See, when we was coming up, that was thought the truth.
Right.
But hip hop changed the whole game. Not only for the students and young people, but even for the teachers. You ever see how these teachers dress today?
Yeah.
Well, they make you cry. I mean, they come there, man, they be, oh, man, you know. They just come comfortable.
Yes, they do.
Some come comfortable. Some act like you're just coming from an all-night card game. You understand? But, hey, that the times have changed. Students have changed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me give you this. When it comes to employment, you see a lot of Latinos working in McDonald's and in all these places. Sometimes they require them to have a dress code. If they can't speak the language, or they got an accent. When we was in the Holocaust of enslavement, it was full employment, 100% employment for Black people. You understand? Because it was free. The more we ask to be treated right and fairly, the more they raise the standards and gains. Because not only do a nurse have to get all the education, then she has to pass a state exam. California is a licensed in state, most credentialed state. You understand? Even a social worker, an MSW, whatever that is. That's a whole new different game. The licensed social worker and all that type of stuff. My point is that they keep moving the goalposts. Because even if we be as white acting as we can. You understand? Sometimes you be wondering why I didn't get the job. I got the skill, I got the education, I got the experience. And they say, well, you overqualified. Mm-hmm. You understand? So I'm just telling you that mm-hmm. I'm for professionalism, mm-hmm. teaching young people to be polite, not just to get a job,
yeah,
but treat each other as if they're gods and goddesses. Mm-hmm. You understand that the same way you treat a preacher, the same way you who represent God to the people and people to God, mm-hmm. the same way you I used to say respect your parents, but you got some issues with parenting today. You understand? I mean, the parents are smoking weed in front of the kids and doing all kind of stuff. Some of the parents and they're not. It's a whole new different game out there. Many kids are in foster homes and they're in placement homes, and mm-hmm. they're not getting the love yeah. and the guidance. Mm-hmm. They're just a check to people.
Yeah.
And so when you run across kids, and y'all, and some of them call them at-risk kids, that's how they build prisons. They go by how much education is in that area, and then they decide if they need a prison in that area. All of that kind of negative talk. Mm-hmm. But if they got the skill, mm-hmm. you don't care. Mm-hmm. When you need a plumber, you need a plumber.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, and your mama could go back a few years. Remember when our parents used to say, go fetch that thing over yonder.
Yeah.
And you better not say, Mom, that's not professional.
Not anything.
You throw a shoe 100 yards
yeah.
in the head while you running from her. From it don't go that way. Yeah. You always honor your mother and father mm-hmm. so your days would be long. And so my point is that, you know, teaching them professionalism with regards to go and approach people for jobs or mm-hmm. to try to get in school or for whatever reason, that requires that standardism mm-hmm. or that code of conduct is good. Mm-hmm. But you also have to teach them about the reality mm-hmm. of life.
Yeah.
And a rationale for why you should do this.
Mm-hmm.
So that they understand you're not telling them, don't be you.
Yeah.
But this is just to get in. And sometimes you have to act that way all the time to stay in.
Mm-hmm.
There you get tenure.
Right.
There you get past probation. Okay. Then you can fall, you know, hey, what's up? You know,
right.
I mean, they got to go through. You got, you know, you got to yeah. protect. So it's a challenge. I'm mm-hmm. just saying that along with the professionalism,
mm-hmm.
you have to teach some of them realism too.
Yeah.
Okay, Professor Rock, quickly. Who was your image of professionalism?
Oh, man, it was so many, so many cats, you know. I was blessed to come up and watch with at a time when, after the Watts Rebellion, when opportunities was opened up. And many of the brothers and sisters through the poverty program, working team posts, and all that, everything that, they're talking to that night, Damien and his mom. We were getting into that team quote,
mm-hmm.
life skill, things of nature. But when it comes out, it was a multitude of images because, as I said, at one time, the only time we dressed up was to go to church.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? I mean, that was Sunday go to meeting clothes. That's what they used to call them. Sunday go to meeting clothes. You got your Sunday go to meeting clothes on. And then at the same time, you know, we used to have clotheslines.
Yeah.
You had to wash your clothes and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And so many of us didn't even think about, you know, we're thinking working for Douglas, working mm-hmm. for the North American, working for labor, you know, Firestone Rubber, working down on the docks or something like that. So we wasn't even thinking about, you know, getting these middle class jobs until after 65. Hmm. You understand? Because most of the things people told you is that you ain't gonna get a job if you don't, you know, learn how to act right and learn how to be right. Hmm. And it was about getting a job, not a profession. Mm-hmm. You know, our parents said, you got to get out the house, you got to get a job. So they didn't care where it was. You know what I'm saying? Our parents wore khaki mm-hmm. suits, yeah. khaki shirt and pants, going to work with a lunch pail. Mm-hmm. You understand? Times change, man. And it's going to be hard to a certain degree to get that dynamic of being a speaking English like you, Brian Gumbo, or Leslie Sykes, mm-hmm. you know, they are professional English speakers, pronouncing because that's their job. Mm-hmm. Versus you in an environment, that's why historian Henry got, when you're in your environment, sometimes you act rough just to keep people above you. You understand? There you are. And profanity mm-hmm. was just a way of conversation. Mm-hmm. Degradation, and it wasn't degradation, it's just our way of communicating. Mm-hmm. You understand? I mean, we can use profanity, but it means something positive mm-hmm. versus the negative is, you know, I mean, say that's a sharp end over there, but that end was sharp. You understand that? Well, you understand, but you know, we didn't look at that as a negative language. And Ebonics, with Dr. Ernie Smith and Dr. Robert Smith, was about teaching mm-hmm. English to us as a second language. Mm-hmm. You see, and getting money for that, mm-hmm. and quit flunking our kids because their phonics wasn't the way you thought it should be, mm-hmm. and holding them back. When I was the counselor for community college, me and Ron Chapman revolutionized the counseling department. Because in order to get into transferable classes, you had to go be tested. Mm-hmm. Every student at a community college, full-time student, had to be tested, and even part-time. And that determined what level of math you could take, what level of English. Well, some of them would be there 20 years mm-hmm. if we went by them taking the test. Mm-hmm. So we said, no, you had the right to fail. You understand? And if you think you can pass that class, we're going to sign you in. Mm-hmm. So all this stuff about, well, you got to be able to prove you can do algebra and all that. Because the average age in community college is 33, you understand? Mm-hmm. And then the prerequisites to get into these classes, kids be there for a two-year degree, you'll be there 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. It takes 8 years to get the degree me and your mom got now. Mm-hmm. You understand? 8 years, average.
That's a long time.
Then some times have changed. I mean, we came through, we had 37, 36 general ed requirements. Now it's 51 mm-hmm. in Cal State. You understand? So times have changed. But my point is, I appreciate you working with the young, even the ones that's appears to be on the right track. Mm-hmm. And, but as Joe say, we like to try to teach the kids that don't want to learn.
Yeah.
You understand? Mm-hmm. That's our challenge. Mm-hmm. You understand? And my son was a principal at Pathway for LA Unified. He has a 99% graduation rate. Mm-hmm. No fights. I mean, you know, he stopped teaching, now he go around training principals. Yeah. But I'm just saying, that's what the school he was at. Mm-hmm. But I came up, my daddy, you know, he was a disciplinarian. Mm-hmm. You got a whooping.
Yeah.
I never had to hit none of my kids. Mm-hmm. But I'd talk to them. Yeah. We'd have family meetings and things of that nature. And so I'm saying that as you working with these young people, many of them will remember you and appreciate the lessons that you taught them, because many of them will open doors for them, their behavior. Only because the European requires of us, they hold us to a higher standard than any other group of people. You understand? And it flatters them. When we name our kids after them, when we behave like them, it flatters them, you know? And that's why some kids say, oh, you trying to teach me to be white. Well, politeness is politeness. You understand? Being clean and dressed is standard. I mean, it's called hygiene. So that's a whole new different thing. You know, just teaching them ethics. And that's what your mother was doing to you. Teaching you ethics and principles of how to be a good young man. A righteous young man. Did a good job. That's it, Roger.
Thanks a lot. All right. Can I respond to some of this? Okay. So now, when I was in high school, my senior year, we had a young teacher come, a drafting teacher, Mr. Williams, Mitch Williams, and he was a drafter. You know, he did blueprints and all of that and drafting. So he came dressed professional daily. And his demeanor was similar to yours, Damien. But he his and then and I say, I guess you could say that you have a serious demeanor too. He spoke in a nice tone, never was loud. And he just, you know, it was different from all the other teachers that I came under. And it was just different, and that's who I kind of noticed, like, wow, you know, this guy is serious and he's dressed nice, and you know, and it was my first image of professionalism in, you know, in that sense. So that's that. Now, earlier on, Ms. McCallman was saying that, you know, you act a certain way. You was teaching your kids to act a certain way in public, and then at home, then they could do other things that they do. Now, we call that code switching. Being able to, no matter where you go, there are specific things you should be doing in those places, especially public places. It's formal and familiar. You know, you in areas that is public, you be formal. You know, you don't use the same language and act the same way you would act at home or in the neighborhood with your buddies. So I teach that to my students. And then Professor Ross said the way teachers dress now. And it was funny that he said that, because now when I go to work, I pull out all of my clothes now and I dress. This is the first year I did it. And I would say, I don't know if you would call it professional, but I be sharp and I get compliments. Like, well, why are you dressing like this? I said, look, I have clothes at home that I don't wear. Now I'm going to wear them. It's like, and a lot of those clothes was for administration, but they won't hire me. So now I dress now. And you know, the kids be like, you know, and so it's a change. So that's how I dress now. And then, something was mentioned about mathematics and the higher mathematics. In all of my mental capacity, mathematics is incorrectly taught, and there's a higher standard for mathematics than it should be. A student should be well versed in adding, subtracting, multiplying, and dividing. Because you can do any math if you have those basic skills in place. And students shouldn't have to take higher level math classes to graduate high school. And this is my little personal gripe teaching math all of these years. Mm-hmm. You know, we got students that still don't know how to multiply. You ask them what 17 plus 5 is, they can't even answer that. They have to count on their fingers. Right. Things of that nature. So if we taught the kids to make sure before they graduate high school how to add, subtract, multiply, and divide, that should be sufficient. They should be able to graduate high school out of a basic math class. Mm. Because there's so many students that are so disinterested in learning the higher mathematics. Yeah. But they get an earful from me, and they get exposed to all of the curriculum that we have. Well, most of the curriculum, because you only have so much time to teach the curriculum. So I just wanted to comment on those things. Mm-hmm. So now, is there anything else, Damien, that you would want to talk about, or is that basically it?
I think that's it. And I think it's, like you said, I think I'm walking away with a lot, because I think this is my second time. And I think Professor Armand Rob mentioned it twice, that what we're teaching the kids or trying to teach the kids is going against really the culture. You know what I mean? So trying to now take that and say, okay, how can we teach these things that are needed? It's going to go against the culture, but to be more, how do we get it to be more, how do we get it to be the culture? You know what I mean? Like you said, I'm professional and, you know, learning these things when we have others that they look to, you know what I mean? As, well, heck, if they're making money, I ain't got to talk, you know, carry myself a certain way. But like you said, like, are we all going to be rappers? Are we all going to be this or that? So trying to figure out how to merge the two. And I think even like Mr. Hemrick, Brother Hemrick said, like one of the things I try to do is teach the same thing at every school. So if I'm dealing with the group at Centennial, my group at Wilson's going to get the same lesson. My group at Linwood or Fireball's going to get the same, you know what I mean? Because I'm like, y'all all growing up in the same culture, but trying to even in that fit the group, their culture that they're living in, who they respect, who they admire, you know, so that now I can see and then adjust our curriculum to fit what we want to teach, but then also to speak to their desires and their heart, really. So I got a lot out of tonight's conversation.
Okay, so Mom?
Well, I do understand, it's strange because when the gentleman asked about Damien and could he interact like in Watts? Mm-hmm. And I thought back to when I put him in, when I had him bus. I have a daughter, and my daughter is completely different from Damien. Okay, she's hood. Definitely hood. We're not going to talk about her, but she's hood. So, but when she was going to school, elementary school, she was really smart.
Mm-hmm. Probably smarter than me.
She was real smart. She was an A and B student. But the one thing, the reason why I bussed, why they got bussed, was because when she was going to school, and I'm like a homework person. Okay, what's your homework? Where's your homework? The first thing you do when you come in, you get your snack, but then you do your homework. So her homework was the same thing every night. Every single night, she had the same homework. So then I made an appointment with the teacher to say, why does she have the same homework? How is she learning if everything she's doing, and why would I let her do the same thing every single night? So then the teacher told, this is what her answer was. Oh, well, because she's the only one doing homework. So because she's the only one doing homework on the board, I put the same homework every night. So I said, so that's what you do? How is that helping my child? So she didn't really have an answer. She said, well, I got to worry about the rest of them. But you're not calling meetings. You're not talking to parents. You're just putting the same homework. So at that point in time, I decided to bus my kids, period. So they were bused, and because I needed them to get an education. Now my daughter, unlike Damien, she's streetwise. She knew everybody in the neighborhood. Streetwise. Well, no, not like her. I mean, you know, no, not like her. You already know that. Not like her. So I have two different children. Okay. So when the gentleman mentioned that brought that to mind. Because even though you see Damien here, if you see his sister, it's a whole different persona. It's a whole different thing. So I don't know how I raised two different kids, but I did. Okay, but they're completely different.
Well, they say mothers love their daughters but raise their sons.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. Yeah. That's a show too. Because I would say I was at a meeting with the Clippers. It was, you know, with nonprofits and their organization working with youth. And somewhere through these meetings, a lady approached me. And she asked me, where did I go to school? And, you know, where did I go to, you know? And I told her, and she said, she said something like, it figures. And I'm like, what does that mean? You know? And she was like, oh, you were bust. I said, yeah, figures. And I remember, I don't know if I asked you about it. I think I did ask her about it. I'm like, why would she say that? And, you know, there was a thought.
Yeah.
In that process about bus kids. And it was weird to me, but this lady, I didn't even know, she was older than me. She was just like, where do you go to school? But she saw it as a negative. And she was like, you're one of them. And I was like, dang, you gonna just say that to me in my face? You know, but it was like, hey, you know, I got it. I understood the process. But like you said, I always think back to I always think about that, you know, like if I'm walking down the streets in Watts, not today much, you know, but back in the day, you know, I stood out, you know, I didn't dress like everybody else. I didn't talk like everybody else. I didn't think like everybody else. But I think what I realized is I was thinking like me, whatever that was. And it was really thinking like you probably, but I thought the way that she taught me to think. And so, like, my street wiseness was just from learning or listening or watching. So then it's like, I always tell the youth, like, even though I'm dealing with game bangers that's in the streets, look here, man, I was never in the streets. I don't know that life. But I know folks who know that life, who I talk to explain it to me. So this is how I'm coming at. And I'll go to them and say, hey, I got a kid that's in the gang. He's in it heavy, hard. How do I deal with that? What do I say? What shouldn't I say? What are the trigger words? You know what I mean? Because they have them. And then they'll give me the feedback and say, hey, this is how you should approach him. So I usually deal with it like that because I know that I don't know it. But then I let them know. Look here, man, I ain't never been in a fight in my life.
No, you haven't.
Not one. You know, my sister was ready to beat me up, you know, but I didn't know the street code. Where I took my glasses off, for her, that was, it's about to go down. I recognized her tone. Mm-hmm. I put my glasses back on. I said, okay, I didn't know that was the bell. But, you know, that's just how it is. But so I let them know that up front, or at least at some point, just so they know. And I'm trying not to be that, just to connect with you, but I'm going to be myself. But it is sometimes a struggle, but I always try to find a way to connect. You know what I mean? So that I don't miss them, because, you know, they're there and they're important and we want that. You know, we want to be able to influence them in a positive way too.
That's beautiful.
Russell Key, I had one quick question.
Go ahead.
Brother Rob brought some up. I had a question for them. You're talking about professionalism. You know, now, like I said, I retired after 29 years of civil service. You know, I worked in three different counties, probably over 20, 25 different cities. Once you're in, and this goes towards civil service, someone correct me, I think civil service is the biggest employer of African Americans in the United States. Professionalism, you're talking about professionalism. Once you get in, doing your professionalism, do you teach the kids, or you ask me this, what's more important, professionalism or being liked?
Ooh.
Once you're in?
Oh, I teach them professionalism, and as a part of that is likability. And I say that because I had a supervisor when I worked at Target for 12 years. She told me that she wanted me. She was like, "You don't work hard. We all know you don't work hard, but you have this skill of being likable." And she wanted me to be promoted to a position that worked sort of right under her because she was like, "You're likable. And I need the people that you're going to be under to like who they're working for." And she was like, "I need to like the person that I'm working with. The person who works hard, he's doing his job, he's there early, he stays late, dotting all his I's and, you know, crossing T's. I don't like him." So she introduced me to that. And she was like, "That's a skill that you possess." And so I teach them, I add that to it. Like, being likable is huge, it's key. It can take you places that, like you said, skill, talent, you know, but that likability, and I use it. Once she told me, and she told me that while I was working this job, because she's seen me doing some stuff. She works for 7-Eleven now, corporate. So she's helped me get some connections with them. But she told me, she was like, "Teach them likability. Teach them likability." And I do it. And it's like, that's one of the funnest lessons that we have, funner lessons that we have. But I use it, and I think it's key so that they know. You know, I'm like, when I come on these school campuses, I need the administrators that I'm dealing with to like me. You know what I mean? Because I want the doors, you know, "Hey, I need to get in this classroom. Hey, I need to talk to this student." At Centennial, it's weird. I can go to, you know, administrators and say, "I'm looking for this student." They'll say, "Hey, okay, he's in this classroom, blah, blah, blah. Go get him. Do you want me to call him?" And I know that's just simply they like me. You know what I mean? So I teach it, I use it, and it's key. It's probably more important, but I put it in that same lesson plan. So thank you. That was a good
one. Yeah, because, you know, my experience, I wish someone explained the likability more than professionalism to me.
Mm-hmm.
I learned on it kind of late in my career.
Yeah.
And, you know, even, you know, Ryan Tarasky, and sometimes you got to tell them, man, they got a tap dance and they got a coon. You can sit there and be with the other brothers on that main line, bend down and lower. But if you ever want to, we call it back then, upward mobility. I don't know what they call it now when you want to promote up, but we have used the term upward mobility. You got to tap dance a little bit, and you got to coon to get to that position and that money. And I wish they would have told me that earlier on, because I made a late charge in promotion and getting to the administration position, because I wasn't with the tap dancing and the cooning and being likable. But once I figured out the game and got likable, did a little tap dancing and coon, my career shot upwards. And I was exposed to stuff that is just unbelievable, man. Being on interview panels and people coming in there, like you said, knocking it out the park, man. Very smart, very this, very professional. But you get the head person come in, wanting to hire this person because they liked them or they were, you know, related to them or a friend. And you just screw somebody's career off because you wanted to hook up someone, you know. But and that professionalism goes all out the window, man. Mm-hmm. Once you get in, you have to toss that away and be likable.
Yeah,
you got to do some tap dancing and you got to do some cooning. That's if you want to promote higher, you know, upward mobility. You can stay at the bottom because a lot of brothers that argued didn't want to do it. Hey, they stayed at the bottom, you know. And there's another thing you guys talked about earlier on when you said you went on an interview, you took a bunch of friends with you. And I kind of laughed because I remember I told Ross Key this story real briefly. He had a position open. This one brother got some inside information. He didn't want to share it with me. And he went off when I asked him because he said, "I'll go mess up his chance of getting a job." "Oh, no problem." I went to the Mexican guy. Mexican guy told me everything. Everything I need to know. Didn't care about me competing. And, you know, hey, 7 years down the line, who's the administrator? Me. Guess who coming in for an interview trying to promote that brother who didn't want to tell me nothing? He's going to come at me looking for a promotion. And when he walked in and saw me in it, he knew. And that brother never went nowhere. You know, he never got promoted. Just unfortunately, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes, man, you know, you do that, we always say, hey, the job you say may be yours one day, you know, mm-hmm. But I just do it on the side because you guys mentioned about that. But yeah, that professional stuff goes out the window, man, when you civil service. It's all about being like tap dancing and cooning if you want to promote higher.
Hey, I remember him saying, he said, the dude didn't give me none of the sandwich. He was talking to Richard Pryor. He said, he didn't give me none of the sandwich. So he didn't. Hey, that was something else when he told me that story. Excellent story, though. But, wow, this was wonderful. You know, for the sake of time, we probably have to end right here. And I know we could go on and on.
Roger P., I wouldn't call it cool. I'd just say he was more strategic.
Thank you.
I agree, Professor Rod. I always, yeah, I hate to say it, but, you know, just so we understand, but, you know, like, even the Latino brothers, even the white brother that told me, he said, hey, man, people come on these interviews, and it's sad that you don't hire the best person position because someone wants to hook up their friend. They'll say, hey, we like Damien, but hey, we get him next time. He really deserved a job, but hey, I got to hire this guy's cousin. Mm-hmm. But I always call it, you got to use all your tools in your tool chest, man. Like you said, talking like you white, or you got to use every tool in your tool chest, man, to get that promotion, man.
Yeah, well, nepotism and, you know, friendship and relationships are key to everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we're born out of relationships, so relationships is key. And, you know, it's good that you developed a relationship with a Latino and he provided you the information. And that's strategy, again. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way you carried yourself and approach yourself. There are a lot of people that we work with that don't understand how to, you know, be more cooperative with each other and share information with each other. You know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, people sometimes they think it's just, you know, we crabs in a barrel and we're pulling each other down. But all people do that. I don't care wherever you go. Asians do it to Asians. Latinos do it to Latinos. Whites do it to whites. They just tore up the Capitol. Everybody said, well, white people got unity. Yeah. You're okay. You know, that's why they got guns.
Thank you.
They get along with each other. You know, we couldn't even carry a gun. Couldn't even carry an ice pick. But the point is that, you know, they know each other. And I agree with the doc. You know, he was able to see and size up how to get his promotion, how to get in position. And he did it. You understand? They want me to just... you know, be quiet, be nice, be this, or cultivate a good relationship with those making the decision and demonstrate that I'm my excellence, you're going to get it. Mm-hmm. But some cats, you know, they just don't have the vision. Mm-hmm. And you have more insight and more vision. Mm-hmm. Hindsight to look back on things, insight to look through things, and foresight to look upon things. Mm-hmm. But you were way ahead of the game, you know. And the Damien, this challenge is, you know, as he teach these young people these things, it's like what Rosh Key always say, you know, I make my kids come to class on time, but there are about 10 teachers that don't care. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? And so you can teach these kids these things, then they go home and they get totally discombobulated. Yeah.
Right.
You understand? And it frustrated to be surprised that the kids are depressed, they're suicidal, mm-hmm. that, you know, just going through challenges, man. I mean, you know, and so it's good to have somebody that they can relate to, mm-hmm. to try to help them get out of this situation. This is one strategy.
Yeah.
be more polite, be more professional, learn how to speak the guy's language, especially if you're going for a job. Mm-hmm. But if you get a vocation, mm-hmm. a skill, that's a whole new different thing. You become a plumber, electrician.
Yeah.
Oh, you understand? That's a whole new different game. And we got to teach our kids getting skills are very important. I always, in my counseling, I teach them about the importance of going to college. Mm-hmm. But I say, you can make more money as a plumber than most people with a college degree.
Yeah.
You understand what I mean? And then, you know, I mean, like I tell them, I say, yeah, like the good doctor, you know, you put your years in, you get your seniority, and then when you retire, you got a decent retirement. Yeah. You understand? And longevity of the job. Some people get a good job and get fired the next day. Mm. You understand? Nasty attitude, that dealing with that, you know, for different reasons. So some people know how to keep a job,
yeah,
keep and take care of their business. And some people know how to keep their mouth shut, or when to hold them, know when to fold them, and know when to run, you know. That's what we used to say. But anyway, that's it.
I'd like to make a quick comment, Brother Rush, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
From the movie Higher Learning with mm-hmm. Ice Cube and Larry Fishburne, I love the part where he's meeting with the brother Epps. Mm-hmm. Williams, it appears that you have not learned the rules of the game. That's what our kids need to learn, the rules of the game, so you can adapt to the various situation. And doctor, this one is for you. You know, doc, I used to be an administrator for years, and when the state came in, they put us all back in the classroom. And I was highly upset, like Rashi Key was, right? So I had a great year teaching history that year. I was in the classroom. I mean, my class was the talk of the campus, right? So, you know, summertime rolls in. So I get a call. There's a new administration at the district. I get a call from this deputy. Hey, Mr. Hembrick, I heard a lot about you. I want to know if you want to get back in administration. I like, hell no. And I hung up the phone, right? So he calls back about 5 minutes later, said, don't hang up on me, brother. Don't hang up on me. He said, you know, I heard about you and someone's requesting you. And it was Miss Bond at the time. So I said, okay, I'll come down there. No shirt, no, I came with a polo shirt on, some cutoff shorts, stuff I play golf in, right? So he's grilling me, the superintendent, up and down about this and that. And, you know, what can I bring to the table to help out the situation? I said, man, I live here. I said, where you live? I know the brothers, their sisters, their parents, their grandparents. That's what I bring to the table, right? And I said, I can do the job, but I said, I ain't kissing no ass. If that's what you're looking for, you go get somebody else. So anyway, I did it until they put me out again, which took about another 10 years right before I retired. I had a run-in with the superintendent's woman. They kicked me to the curb, but you know, you got to stand up at some point. And once I knew I had my 25 years, you know, they were going to have to retire me at my administrative salary. So I didn't give a crap after that. I said and say it to who. So anyway, good evening.
All right. Thanks.
Hey, please. Excellent. I got to say one more thing, you guys. This was the best call. You guys have made me laugh. So, okay. So I really enjoyed the call. I really enjoyed most the mother and son connection because of my son. So I look at you and I just am so happy that you are able to have this moment with your mom at this time. So this is really a blessing. And then I also think about all the career stuff as a career counselor. You guys are like going crazy with all the career stuff. I'm like, yes. So definitely when you hear professionalism, you hear interview, there is a standard. When you hear work, that's different. Yeah. So you can interview and you have to play that part. And then when you work, you gotta play that part. So it's called life, it's called living, and it's called, this is life. So, you know, we teach life skills and it's a blessing. I love y'all and y'all are amazing. Thank you, have a good night.
Okay,
thanks a lot. Code switching, being able to adjust code switching. But okay, folks, this was wonderful. I appreciate everybody. Appreciate Mom coming on, Damien. We're going to have to do this again. This was wonderful. So thanks a lot. And next week, we have, well, I'm going to let Professor Rob tell us who's coming on Monday. And then I'll let everybody know who we have.
It needs to be someone from Black Lives Matter or either the sister from that works with the homeless and giving us an update on the strategies of homeless in L.A. County City.
That'd be awesome. I hope that materializes. Okay, so next week we have a brother that's coming on. He was on a few months back with another guest, but he wasn't a guest. He just was on the panel. He go by Black LCSW. And the topic is managing emotions, distress, tolerance. So that's going to be a good one. We've been having some excellent shows, and I just appreciate everything. So I'm going to say Conscious Corner, and each one teach one. Everybody have a good evening.
All right. Good evening.